Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minutes 117 of Season 5 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me on this special Sunday edition episode is Sean German of the Next Scene Podcast. Welcome back to the show, Sean.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me back. Excited to be here.
Yeah. And once again, I love you, Sean.
And once again, they told me there were terrorists at the airport.
or you can say the other line also.
Why does this keep happening to us?
Minute 117 begins with someone playing dumb and ends with credit for a Gordon Company Silver Pictures production. So basically, we ended things yesterday with John getting stumped by Lorenzo, who asks him, "You get this ticket in my airport?" And John just like looks at him. You know, his mind is racing. How do I respond to this? What am I supposed to say? Yeah. Am I supposed to be truthful here?
Well, and why do I care about a parking ticket at this point? Like, look around you. There's, sirens, police, firemen, fire trucks, ambulance. There's so much going on. And you're worried about a parking ticket at this point in time?
No, he's worried about how he's going to tell his wife that his car got, that her mother's car got towed.
Yeah.
I think that's more of the issue. Car got I don't think the issue is, a big deal. I have to pay a parking ticket. It's that I now have to actually tell my wife that we don't have a car. Yeah. In the middle of the night, he's now going to have to call his father-in-law to come pick him up. Or send him a cab.
Yeah, there was no Uber at this time. So
That's right. So basically, we see John's mind racing, trying to figure out how he's going to respond to this. And then the shot goes back to Lorenzo. And, just to go back to what we were talking about yesterday with the people in the background behind Lorenzo, they're a little blurry now. Yeah, I guess the proposal is over. And it actually looks like he still has his jacket on. So maybe that's a continuity error. Yeah. We saw him taking off his jacket and now he has a jacket.
He did not give his jacket to the woman that was sitting there whose foot he was examining previously.
That's right.
I guess maybe she said no.
Then he probably wouldn't have stayed there. She didn't say no. She said, but they told me there were terrorists in the airport.
Yeah, they told me there were terrorists at the airport.
And then Lorenzo looks at him and goes, "Ah, what the hell? It's Christmas." And he rips it up and just like throws it through the air for Marvin to clean up later. Do you think he's allowed to do this? Is he allowed to just rip up a parking ticket?
Well, I'm thinking is he allowed to? Can he? I don't know. I hope so. Or maybe just he's thinking with all the terrorists at the airport, it'll get lost in the shuffle. Because I'm thinking at this time. Everything's on paper. So it's not like he probably didn't call it in or it's not registered in some system. So the only record of the ticket is the physical ticket itself, either the paper copy that you put on the windshield of the car, or I assume that there's another copy that the police have a hold on. But so that paper is the only record of the ticket. But I wonder if they track that. So when they go in and they do an accounting of all the tickets that NYPD Blue here has written, and they notice one serial number is off. I assume they're numbered sequentially. They notice hey, why is this one ticket missing? Will he have to explain what happened? But I guess think they have, you have some, some wiggle room, they're allowed to give warnings or rip up a ticket like this. Yeah, I think it's okay.
Okay, again, I don't know what the legal ramifications are in Washington D.C. about this. I mean, it was probably 23 years ago. I was a police officer here in Israel for a few months. It was just for 6 months before I had enough of it. But But one of the things that they told us is that you have discretion about giving a ticket up until you start writing it. Once you start writing it, you have to give it. Again, that's what the law is here, you know, for the police, because it goes according to the fact that they, you know, they keep an account of how many tickets are being given, but they also, they want to have quotas. So they want to know, you know, you can't just skip a number and stuff like that. So to me, it's very strange. Yeah. To me, it's strange for him to be able to rip it up and just throw it in the air like that. You know, and he's also littering. I mean, we talked much earlier in the movie about the fine for littering in Washington, D.C. and New York, which I think now he can be fined for this also, for what he's doing.
He's just a scofflaw at this point. He's That's crossed right. over to the other side. He's no longer on the side of law and order.
That's right. That's right. Because, you know, he's NYPD Blue. Yeah. You know, law and order and NYPD Blue just don't work together.
That's interesting. So I knew there was a rule as it pertained to towing. I know, like, if they – once your vehicle is hooked up to the tow truck, that most places then they're, like, committed. They can't – you know, they have to then complete the action of towing you back to, you know, the yard or wherever, and then you can claim your vehicle there once you start towing. But it's interesting that the same applies to tickets. Once you start writing, that then you know, the officer of the law is committed to completing that ticket at that point.
Right. Because, I mean, at least with us, we did have a carbon copy there, you know, so, the, you know, you're not writing it out twice. So there is a record. You need to have, you know, the white version and the yellow version and the pink version, you know, in triplicate or whatever it is. So, yeah, it's just strange to me to see him doing this. Again, maybe being the police chief there, he does have that discretion. Maybe, you know, if you bribe the police chief enough, you can get him to, you know, to rip up tickets or just, you know, if you save the day.
It's extenuating circumstances.
Correct.
I think.
Correct.
And I mean, leeway in these kind of situations.
Right. And the truth is, this is the first time that I've noticed that Lorenzo has a wedding ring. You know, I never thought about it beforehand about, is there a Mrs. Lorenzo somewhere? But apparently there is. And he doesn't need to call her and say, honey, I'm going to be late because someone told me they're terrorists at the airport.
You know? Because they told me they're terrorists at the airport.
That's right. I don't know. John smiles at the chuckle that we get from Lorenzo. He's finally happy. You know, I think that they wanted to end the movie, you know, showing that Lorenzo's not really such a bad guy. But now tell me something. He just ripped up the ticket. But does that help John get his car back because his car is in the impound?
No, that does not help John at all.
That's right. John will go to the impound and say, I need my car. They'll say, okay, did you pay your ticket? No, Lorenzo ripped it up and threw it all over the runway. Oh, well, if that's the case. All right,
actually made things hard. Yeah, they made things harder for him because, yeah, they'll ask him, there's towing fees and impound fees, but you also have to prove that you paid the original ticket, which now he can't pay because there's no record of it.
That's right.
So how does he get his car back? How does he get his in-laws car back? Even worse.
That's right. Maybe this is all part of Lorenzo's plan. Lorenzo wants him to think that he's a nice guy, but Lorenzo actually has this plan to screw John over even more. Because now you're not going to get that car back so quickly. You thought you were going to go back and pick up the car tomorrow. Now you're going to have to wait at least a week.
He's very, very devious, that Lorenzo. That's right. Keep an eye on that one.
That is correct. Holly is still looking on, completely confused, not knowing what's going on at all. So, you know, I guess John's going to have a lot of explaining to do when he gets home, when they get back to his in-laws' house. You know, not only to tell the in-laws about everything that just happened and why, you know, why we've left the kids by you for a few hours without being in touch. So, you know, yep, not something. I mean, I guess John must get along somewhat with his in-laws because he is staying with them without Holly. So it can't be that horrendous.
Yeah, but they got to be questioning. So even, you know, so Holly is questioning, as she did last minute, why does this keep happening to us? I wonder, you know, what do her parents think? Like, why does this keep happening to our no good son-in-law? Why does he keep dragging our daughter into these crazy situations?
That's right. You see, you know, you have chick magnets, and he's a terrorist magnet. You know.
Terrorist magnet. Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I don't know. The two of them wiggle around and sit down on the back of the golf cart, and we have Lorenzo just looking at them from afar. Once again, we see the paramedic still hitting on their girl or proposing in the background. And this time you can actually see that she does have a jacket around her. So he did take off his jacket and gave it to her. So he is quite chivalrous.
Okay. Yeah, that's nice. Yeah, because the last time we saw him, it was kind of out of focus in the background. But it
that's
looked
right.
like he was walking away.
That's right.
That was my first thought is like, why, he's just walking away from her. But apparently he was just walking to get behind her so then he could put the jacket over her shoulders.
Right.
Chivalry is not dead.
Chivalry is not dead in Washington, D.C., in Dulles Airport. How's that? And so then we get a crane shot here, which shows the, you know, the golf cart start moving on. And John and Holly are in the back. Holly puts her head on John's shoulder. And then we see all of these other people, you know, just standing around. There is a police car with a trunk open with people hugging in the back behind the car. Can't really figure that one out. There's an ambulance moving backwards. And first of all, I love the shot because it's a great pan to give us the full version of what's going on here. You know, we see all of these various, emergency vehicles, and we see the planes, and we can actually finally see how many planes are here. You know, did you count how many planes we get to see in the shot?
We see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. At least parts of 6 planes, I think.
Correct. Yeah. One of them we just see like the fin, you know, right mm-hmm. next.
Yeah, one is just like the tail, or and then one is like just the nose, and then there's what, 4 that we see the whole plane. And I was a little surprised that they there doesn't seem to be as many people as I expected. And you know, on the scenes on the ground.
That's right.
With John and Holly, we see in the background there's just, you know, all the people that we talked about that are embracing and hugging and all the emergency personnel that are responding. But as we back up, and maybe by this point it's, you know, 2 minutes have passed, so they, you know, people have had time to disperse, but as they pull back, the scene does not seem as crowded.
No.
as it looked you know, a couple minutes ago.
That's right. You know, because everyone went somewhere else to hug. I don't know.
Yeah.
And you know, as the crane pulls away, so we start hearing you know, the movie's theme song, or the series theme song, because it starts playing Let It Snow, Let It Snow. And then
Snow, Let It Snow, Let It Snow.
That's right. And then the we start getting credits. So the first credit we get is directed by Rennie Harland, followed by the screenplay you know, screenplay by Stephen D'Souza and Doug Richardson. Then after that, we get the produced by Lawrence Gordon, Joel Silver, and Charles Gordon. You know, and I like the fact that we still see people like moving around, because, you know, it always made me wonder if this is a real shot of airplanes, you know, or is it like a matte painting or something like that. But it seems to me that this is a real shot. Because you do have people moving back and forth and vehicles moving and stuff like that, that it's very possible that when they film this, and I believe this, I will always believe that what they're filming here is the scenes that they did in Alpena, Michigan, which is where I was actually supposed to go with a friend of mine to go be extras on this movie, and we never did it. You know, silly 16-year-old me. I should have gone. That's right. So I believe that you know, what they might have done was just, you know, move these planes into position and then, you know, film the scene here, because they were filming all night. At least if this is what took place in Alpena, Michigan, you know. But based on what I recall, that is what they, you know, what they were filming, you know, these scenes. Then we have the DP, whose name is Oliver Wood. Have you ever heard of Oliver Wood before?
I'm not familiar with Oliver Wood.
You know, because like for me, it's always interesting that, you know, you see some of these action movies from the 80s and stuff like that, and in general, you know, a lot of the DPs back then became directors. You know, you have like Jan de Bont and stuff like that. So Oliver Wood was a DP that was a cinematographer that was born in 1942, and he just passed away recently. He passed away in February of this year at the age of 80. Okay, he was a cinematographer on 60 different movies, according to IMDb.
60.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, he's worked on some twosies there.
Yeah. Yeah, no, he's definitely you know, done some great stuff. I mean, all the way back to 1969, he was a cinematographer. And I mean, this to me is one of the biggest movies on his resume. I mean, he was also in Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey. He was the DP there. Mm-hmm. He was a DP for Rudy. Have you ever seen Rudy with Sean Astin?
Yeah, Ruby. Yeah, sure.
Rudy.
Also,
worked
on Face Off with
Rudy. That's right.
Rudy.
That's right. Yeah. He did Mr. Rudy. Holland's Opus. I love that movie.
Mr. Holland's Opus, yeah. Face Off with John Woo.
Mm-hmm. The Bourne Supremacy, The Bourne Ultimatum.
Bourne Identity. Yeah, I did a few of those Bourne films.
He did three of the Bourne films. So yeah,
did some Will Ferrell films also. Talladega Nights, Step Brothers, The Other Guys.
Yeah,
did some Anchorman too. So did some comedy as well, some action, some comedy. Yeah, he got around.
Yeah, I'm actually surprised that I've never heard of him beforehand.
Yeah, just probably one of those people, you know, just quietly working behind the scenes. His final credit was Morbius.
Right,
2022. So he was Morbin to the end.
That's right. And he was a he was supposed to be the cinematographer on Cutthroat Island, which was a Rennie Harlan movie, pirate movie with Rennie Harlan's wife at the time, Gina Davis. But while they were filming, he actually fell off a crane into a water tank and broke his leg, and needed to be replaced.
Ouch!
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah, that'll do it.
Yeah, I would think so. You don't really want that happening.
No.
Then we have the production designer, John Vallone, or Vallone, I don't know how you. And as his credit fades out, the background also fades out. You know, we get now a black background instead of seeing all the planes. Then we have the supervising editor, Stuart Baird. And then, you know, then you know, they're done with the main, technical credits. And then you have, you know, a Rennie Harlan film. And then it says a Gordon Company Silver Pictures production. And that's pretty much how this minute ends. You know, tomorrow we'll continue with the credit with more credits with stuff like that. But, you know, I like the way that they do this, that, you know, because this movie has. The only opening credit in this movie is just the words Die Hard 2, Die Harder. That's it. Nothing beyond that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So some of these credits are credits that you normally would see at the beginning of a movie. So they're sort of like doubling up by the way that they do them.
Yeah. Particularly like director and screenplay, that kind of stuff usually is up front.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. So do you have anything else for this minute before we get into the script?
No, nothing else for the minute.
Right. Unfortunately, there was no credit for the paramedic being chivalrous. You know, we're not going to see him. Yeah. So the script, we have the last three lines of the script where it says, McLean and Holly get into the cart. Marvin drives them away, light blinking, and we pull back until McLean and Holly are just part of the crowd. The end. So again, I find it very interesting that the whole Lorenzo thing is missing here. You know, as I mentioned yesterday, it's something that made sense to put into the movie, which is obviously probably the reason why they put it in. But you'd think that it would have been somehow incorporated into the script, that they would have thought, you know, because it's an elaborate team to have to deal with. You know, with John and Holly, you know, with all the blood and guts on them and stuff like that. And you got, you know, Marvin getting ready to drive off in the golf cart, and you got this guy proposing in the background, and you got, you know, Lorenzo ripping up tickets, whether he's allowed to or not. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on at the same time. And if this was all something that they decided, you know, on the spot to do, that's pretty impressive.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, again, today is Sunday. So, normally we don't have episodes on Sunday, so we don't have a Sunday segment. But because Sean won't be with us on Wednesday, so we're going to actually do today, we're going to do a Wednesday segment, which is Off the Beaten Track Aviation Edition. So the idea behind this segment is that my guest will give some sort of story, anecdote, adventure, misadventure, something that's happened to them over the course of their life that is somehow related to aviation. Could be any type of, you know, flying. It could be something that's related to an airplane, space shuttle. I don't know. So Sean, what type of story do you have with us about you going to the moon?
Yeah, so I have a an airplane related. I don't know if it counts as a story. It's a series of words that I'll speak and you will hear. So and one of the sort of I guess tropes or cliches, one of the things that people joke about when they talk about flying is that the reclining seats. And I guess it depends on which end of the seat, either, you know, certainly if it's the seat in front of you that's reclining, then it goes all the way down and, you know, you feel like a dentist where you can like look in the person's mouth because their head is in your lap. But if it's your seat that's reclining, usually it's not far enough and it doesn't seem to really move much. And I know I've always kind of wondered because I never felt like the seats really recline much, and does it, you know, did it make a difference? Is it worth reclining at all? Is it just one of those things that's like a, you know, an illusion of some kind of choice? And I learned the hard way that that recline actually makes a difference. And I don't know if this is, you know, if there's a reason, if they've calculated kind of what, you know, how many degrees a airplane seat should or needs to recline, but I had an experience flying. I've got a, basically I've got a syndrome. I've got ordinarily low blood pressure, but then I've got a sort of condition or syndrome where my blood pressure will drop and, you know, very, very much, very quickly. And it causes me to, I guess I'll say faint. I mean, it's not, a doctor will say, no, that's not what fainting is, but to the layman, to the layperson, you know, one moment I'm standing and the next minute I'm flat on the ground and I'm unconscious. It looks like I'm fainting because my blood pressure has dropped. And I had an instance where my wife and I, we were flying. I forget where exactly what trip it was, where we were going, but we were on the plane. We're in our seats. It may have been during takeoff where I suddenly feel lightheaded. I feel woozy. I'm dizzy. I feel one of these episodes coming on. My, my blood pressure is dropping. And normally what the doctor recommends, what my doctor has told me to do when I feel this coming on is to lay down flat, get as flat as I can, as possible. If I can lay down on the floor, you know, if there's a bed or a couch, but even if it's just laying down on the floor, that's what I should do. Now, at this point, I believe it was during the process of takeoff. So, like, it really wasn't practical. I mean, it's difficult enough on a plane to someone to get up and then lay down in the aisle on a plane. Like, that would have been disruptive enough. But particularly during takeoff, I don't think they would have appreciated it. But I put my seat back, and it helped. I was surprised. I was shocked. Like, I didn't think, I'm like, this is not going to do anything. I'm going to faint. I'm going to have an episode and this is going to be a whole thing. Like, you know, just want to make sure. And this is something usually I just, you know, if I lay down with a few minutes, a little sip of water, it passes. So my main, you know, my first thought is, let me get as flat as possible. My second thought is, I don't want the plane to turn around. Like, don't abort the takeoff because of me. Like, this is going to pass. It looks more serious than it really is. I'll be fine. But, you know, as I'm thinking this, so I recline my seat and it only goes back the couple inches that a, you know, a typical kind of coach airplane seat will tilt back these days. But that was enough that I still felt dizzy and woozy. I don't think I lost consciousness. I didn't kind of quote unquote faint through this episode. Even though I wasn't able to lay completely flat, that small tilt of the seat was enough to get me, get my head back far enough or whatever it needed to do. It was enough to alleviate, just the worst of the symptoms. So again, like I still felt dizzy. I still felt my blood pressure drop, but yeah, I didn't faint the way I usually would once those kind of symptoms start coming. So there you go. There's the truth of it. That little bit of reclining, at least in that one instance, that little bit made the difference. That was enough of a recline to get me, if not flat, at least inclined enough that, it helped. So there you go. That's my flying story, my airline story.
That's great. You've proved that it works.
So, yeah. So the next time you're flying, if you're, skeptical, why does this, the seat's only going to recline this small little bit, why have it at all? Or if the person in front of you is reclining and you're upset with them, and maybe they're starting to feel faint and they need to go flat and they're trying to get as flat as they can. And, they regret the inconvenience, but it's for a better cause, because certainly if they faint or if they have some kind of full on episode of whatever they're suffering and then the plane has to turn around, that's going to inconvenience you a lot more than a slightly reclined seat.
Wow.
That's my message.
Okay. That is a great message. Thank you very much.
Okay. Oh, you're welcome.
All right. So Sean, you want to once again tell people where they can find you or your podcast?
Yeah. So once again, I am Sean and I am from Next Scene Podcast, where we take on pop culture one scene at a time. And every year for the past few years, we've been doing holiday specials. And this year we'll be covering Pee-wee's Big Adventure. The film, we'll be covering it in chunks in several episodes to delight you and entertain you during this coming holiday season. So check that out at nextscenepod.com. And at Next Scene Pod on the social media.
All right. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe to any podcatcher you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So, Sean, you feel like coming back again tomorrow? And I would say finish off the week, but to finish off your section of this movie with lots of credits.
Well, all I can say to that is they told me there were terrorists at the airport.
But why does this keep happening to us? Yeah. That's right. All right. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little village.